Eboo programmers. Tune in to hear episodes of Lip Fantastic, APA Compass, DMA Roberts' award-winning series, Crossing East, and an all-new Pacific Underground and music playlist by Sun Lee and DJ Diablo. That's Asian and Pacific Islander American Heritage Day, Friday, May 3rd, from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m., only on your community radio station, KBOO Portland. For more information and program schedule, just go to our website at kboo.fm.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening. Thank you for tuning in to Labor Radio on April 29th. And I will be having two guests with us this evening. I have with us here in the studio, Smitha Shadaga.
Correct.
How'd I do?
Did
Shadaga.
Very well. Yes.
You know, I can really mess around with parts of speech and other things, but it's good to have you again. And she is representing Oregon Indivisible, almost becoming like a co-host on the fifth Mondays at least.
Yes, I'm very honored.
Well, I'm honored to have you here, and I hope we have a good and lengthy half an hour program where you'll get us up to speed on what Oregon Indivisible is about and what you're doing, plus a few other things with your personal blog.
Podcast.
Oh, I'm from a different era. But thank you for coming. We're also going to have Mr. Ron Verzu call in, and he's going to give us a report about an upcoming conference that's coming in on this weekend. And it's the Pacific Northwest Labor History Conference. And this is a conference that blends the rank and file unionist with the academic people that need to present papers when they're doing academic work about labor unions and labor history. So it's a really nice conference because the blending of those two things is really nice. And we get a lot of speakers from all over the United States and sometimes a lot of Canadians because we one-third of our membership comes from Canada, British Columbia. So it's an international organization. So it'll be interesting to know what Ron has to say about that. So, Smitha, why don't we start with you, and we'll be interrupted when Ron calls in. So let me hear your latest on what Oregon Indivisible is up to.
Okay. So Indivisible Oregon, for those who have not heard of us, we're a grassroots group, part of the Indivisible movement, and we really work to advocate on a federal level with our members of Congress. So what we've been doing is the new Congress has been in since January, and we've been really trying to get progressive policies passed, and it has been pretty successful in my opinion. I mean, I've never paid this close attention to Congress before, but in just the few months since January, we have passed H.R. 1, which is the House has passed it, which is a landmark bill about voting rights and anti-corruption, really bringing back some of the things that have been lacking in our democracy. H.R. 8 passed the House, which is an update to the background check bill for gun violence prevention. The Violence Against Women's Act was reauthorized in the House. The Paycheck Fairness Act was passed in the House. So there's a lot of progressive things happening in the House in just a few months. And in addition to that, the House has been able to provide some oversight. So one of the things that on the federal level, and I mean in any level of government, is you need to provide oversight just to make sure that things are working the way that they need to. And in the last Congress, that was not really happening with this current administration. And so this House, under Democratic leadership, has been providing that oversight. So we've seen things as far as having people from the administration come in and have to answer questions about family separation at the border or predatory lending techniques. For instance, Representative Katie Porter, who is from California, she has done an amazing job of taking CEOs of Fortune 500 companies and asking them very basic questions about how workers in their companies are making ends meet. And they're not able to answer those questions. And it's just really showing, you know, what are the problems with our government and how we need to work to make it for the people.
Thank you. And tell me how the local people interface into what's going on in D.C.
So, you know, when I first started this, I was like, it just seems really far away. You know, how does this really matter? And, you know, your representatives, your senators and your representative, you know, they work for constituents. So you're a voter, but not even just voters. Anyone who lives in that district, you're a constituent and you technically are your member of Congress boss. And so they want to know what you're thinking. And so if you really care about an issue and you want them to be passionate about it, it's really important to call them and tell them, you know, I really want you to vote, you know, on HR 8 for background checks, or I really want you to vote up for the Equality Act, or I really want you to vote on the DREAM Act, which will help, you know, undocumented our neighbors here in this country. And so that's how we can interact on the ground. You can do it with phone calls. You can do it with district visits. You can do it with emails. But your member of Congress will take all the information that they get from their constituents, and then they take it and they use it into how they're going to do their job. Now, they don't always agree with you. But if your member of Congress agrees with you, it's very important to call them, because then they are able to use that. And because there are calls and our letters of their political power, and they're able to go out there and be bold. So you don't want your member of Congress just to vote the right way on a certain thing. You want them to go out and make the case so that others will join them. Now, if they don't agree with you on something, you definitely want to call and say, hey, we don't agree. And while you may not change their vote, you can influence their tactics. So, you know, for instance, if they might go out there and plan to do, you know, a press conference or do, you know, a lot of campaigning on a certain issue. But if they get so many calls against it, they may change their tactics. And so when your representative either agrees with you or doesn't, it is still really important that they hear from you, because these calls and these emails are like a snap poll for them, like a flash poll to know what's going on the ground. And it really can change the calculus of what they do in Washington, D.C.
And you have a method for people to take care of that issue by calling in, and you have numbers on your website.
So our website for Indivisible Oregon is indivisibleor.org, and we do daily calls to action 5 days a week, and that's at indivisibleor.org/actions. And on the website, there are scripts. There's a button you can push with your member of Congress's phone number. So it's right there. And we've been working really hard over the last 3 months to make these scripts very readable. We're writing it in a little bit of shorter language, trying to really make it easy to make your calls. And we have found, you know, that with these shorter scripts, people are able to call more and they feel more comfortable. And the other thing I just like to point out is that the person picking up the phone call, is not there to discuss in detail policy with you. They're really there to answer your phone call, write down what your comment is. And so, you know, be courteous, even if you don't agree, and they'll take down your name, they'll take down your zip code, and then they'll write down your comment. It literally takes about a minute or 90 seconds. So if you want to call all three of your members of Congress, it can take under 5 minutes, and then you're kind of good to go for that day.
And if you're shy, you can call after hours and leave messages, and they count practically the same.
Oh, they totally
do. It's a tally that they're keeping.
Mm-hmm.
I think we have Ron on the phone right now. Hi, Ron.
Hi, Lane. How are you?
I'm good. I'm glad I can hear you. That's good. So, Ron, tell us, you're Ron Verzon. How'd I do? Verzu?
You'll get there.
I'm almost there.
Almost there.
We've decided that you're going to be in charge of the film that you're presenting this weekend at the Pacific Northwest Labor History Conference. So why don't we start out with you telling us about your film?
Okay, now it's not my film, but it is an important new film. This is going to be part of our opening ceremonies for our Pacific Northwest Labor History Conference this weekend in Portland. It's called Stand, and we're going to get a little teaser for this new musical. It's a little bit in the tradition of Hamilton, which was, of course, a big hit in the last few years and on Broadway. It tells the story of something called the 1919 General Strike in Winnipeg, a city in the middle of Canada. And this is an important strike because it kind of set the tone for labor activism for the next 100 years. And our conference theme kind of plays into it, because we are talking about the general strike as a historical thing. We had one in Seattle in 1919 and one in Winnipeg, as I say. And this conference is set up so that we can have a whole good bunch of conversation about what that means, what that's left us with, what is the legacy of the general strike era, and also what's going on today in terms of organizing and using different tactics to you know, keep pushing for labor rights and human rights wherever we are, in whatever workplace we're in and whatever legislature we're in. So it opens up themes like radicalism in the labor movement, government and employer attempts to suppress workers' rights, which go on regularly, as we know, and just building workers' solidarity. These strikes and this film are about that. They're about inspiring that and inspiring young people to carry on where history left off.
And we have quite a few registrants from the youth groups around the state. Is that not true?
It's true, and one of the reasons for that is the organization opened it up to the younger people and students without charging them anything in the way of fees, so they can come free of charge.
That's good, and I know that there's been a concerted effort to get the students from Portland State University to come on over, because the conference is located at the University Place Hotel, which is right across the street from PSU, by the train tracks.
Yeah, the conference center right there, where we've been holding our meetings, as you know, for many, many years now. I think the two keynote panels, too, should get a little highlight here, Lane, because we've got some great speakers coming in to actually tell us about the history of the general strikes, both the one in Winnipeg and Seattle, but also to talk about organizing and how this has inspired new organizing and new tactics for organizing workers at a time when things are not looking that good in many cases. We've had this the Supreme Court Janus decision that has basically cut the legs out from under the public sector unions in terms of dues collection, and that's going to hinder organizing. But the labor movement has a way over the decades of being innovative about in the face of adversity, and I think they're coming to the fore now. And some of the people talking at this conference will remind us of that, and we'll have some excellent ideas for how to overcome the some of the things we've been trying to deal with here in the last several years. I wanted to add, Lane, that you probably know that I wrote an article, a kind of an op-ed page piece in the recent Northwest Labor Press, and the article stressed the need to look at labor history and not dismiss it. And I was inspired to write it by a lot of the things that are happening with teachers' unions around the country. Not just teachers' unions, of course, but largely teachers' unions who are looking at labor history and saying, we're inspired by this, and we can inspire our members to take charge of their lives and their working lives by looking back at history.
Well, and also one of the things about labor history that came to me personally was through the Labor Education Resource Center out of the University of Oregon, which, as you know, is being threatened. Do you want to speak to that?
I do, because LIRC is a dear part of my life since I've been here. My partner worked at LIRC for 15 years, and we're concerned, deeply concerned, that the University of Oregon is basically cutting their funding in half, which will, if they go through with it, which will effectively really end their role as a key educator and research organization in the state, and also in Washington as well. This is a terrible measure by the university administration, and hopefully they'll renege on it. There's opportunities to voice your complaints, by the way, on the LIRC website, lerc.org, and people should stand up and speak on this one. This is an important organization. We can't lose it.
Right, and at the end of the show, I will give the address for the president, Michael Schrill? Schrill?
Yeah.
So if we could send some information to him about the cut of 68% in LIRC's budget as opposed to the 8-10 in all the other programs seems a little drastic.
Including the gallery, which is an excellent gallery. No, it's not right, and it's not on. I'm glad you're going to promote some protest about this. I wanted to say that there are a couple of other films, one in fact by LIRC on home care workers. That is an excellent film we'll be showing on the weekend. And there's a wonderful opportunity to hear from the home care workers themselves about their workplace. They work in state and private institutions. And they are just a marvelous group of people to hear right from the ground up what it's like to work in a non-union shop and what it's like to work in a union shop. And it's really an eye-opener. Good little film and excellent chance to talk to people about their work.
What day does that show? Saturday?
It's Saturday. You're right. It is Saturday.
But people can drop in to the University Place Hotel, and we're in the ballroom most of that day. So if they're interested, they can come by and listen to some of these speakers and watch some movies. Well, Ron, where was I wrong about your movie, your film?
Oh, well, I produced a film that, about something quite unique, actually. It's a little documentary about a group of workers who were unknown to them, were building the atomic bomb in a little area where I was born. And this is a film called Codename Project 9. It's available on Amazon.com. It's just one of those things that you grow up with as a kid, knowing that the workplace where your dad's work is actually not known to them is producing an element that was thought to be important in the atomic bomb. So it's about that, and it's about the workers' struggle and trying to keep that knowledge alive so people don't forget that the organization, the factory they work in, was part of something pretty terrible.
Oh, yeah. My grandfather and their family were kicked off of Washington Farm near what you might call Hanford. So, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, they had to move. I mean, they were compensated, but, you know, that was part of they were in the zone that had to be excavated for that purpose. Yes, we lose these histories, don't we?
Well, that history is still unfolding. Hanford Engineering Works, or which is what it was called back in the day, is now a horrible situation because of all the pollution that's been left from the nuclear waste. And they've tried to make it into a national park, but in fact, it's probably a national disaster in the making. So its history goes on and on. A very similar situation to what I document in my film Codename Project 9.
Okay. Well, Ron, thank you very much, and I appreciate you calling in. I miss you here in the studio, but you're calling in from where? You could be calling in from anywhere.
These days you could be, couldn't you? No, I'm in Eugene.
Okay.
And I'm looking forward to seeing you again this weekend.
Oh, yeah, I'll be there. Okay, thank you very much, Ron.
Okay, my pleasure.
Bye. Okay, we're back to you, Smitha. And that was Ron's report on the Pacific Northwest Labor History Conference at a location near Portland State University, the University Hotel. So people are invited to drop in and join us for some of the workshops.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really interesting. I mean, I'd be interesting to see some of those films that he talked about, especially the home care workers. I sit on the board of home care organization in Washington State called Carina, and it is working with the local SEIU to work with home care workers so that they can have a living wage, and working on a computer interface so that they can find jobs easily and match up with people who need home care. And so it's a really interesting platform that has been going on for a couple of years. And so and as a physician, I have like an interest in home care workers and making sure that they have a livable wage and really can have a career there, because I mean, as our population gets older and as we spread apart, home care workers are such an integral part of the healthcare system that I think it's really great that there's a film highlighting that.
Yeah, well, thank you for including that, because, yes, your private life and your indivisible life kind of come together here on Labor Radio.
Yes, they do.
Okay, you were going to tell us a little bit about the difference between inquiry and articles of impeachment.
Yes, so Lane and I...
How indivisible is in that?
Yes, so we discussed this before we came on the air. So, I mean, Indivisible Oregon is, you know, and in general, we're very committed to pushing progressive actions in Congress. I mean, we're still calling about those things. We also are calling about oversight. And we're also trying to push the Senate to take some of these issues up, because a lot of the legislation that I mentioned is getting stalled in the Senate because the Senate does not want to take up anti-corruption bills or take up gun violence prevention bills. And so these votes are still very important to have happen in the House, because it sets the stage for what we can do when we make other changes to Congress. But for the last couple of weeks, what the focus has really been on has been the fact that the Mueller report came out. So for those who don't know, you know, after the 2016 election and when this first administration happened, there was a special prosecutor that was commissioned. It was Robert Mueller, and he looked into whether or not there was any interference in our investigation, and then subsequently to see if this current administration obstructed that investigation. And so that report came out a couple of weeks ago, and it's in two volumes. And volume one very clearly states that Russia did interfere with our elections. And then the second volume outlines about 10 areas in which this administration obstructed that investigation. And so trying to figure out, you know, how do we approach this? So that's a two-pronged approach. Number one is that we need to secure our elections. Part of that is in legislation that's already passed the House. Really need to get the Senate to take that up. So making calls about that. But then the second thing is, you know, what do we do about obstruction of justice? And obstruction of justice is an impeachable offense. It's for what Nixon would have potentially been impeached. And so, you know, how do we approach that? And so really diving into that and seeing what the options are. So in Congress, you know, they can investigate, you know, any issue of oversight. And they can do that in the committees that already exist. So in the House, there are committees such as the Judiciary Committee or the Ways and Means Committee or the Oversight Committee, where they can take up issues that include obstruction of justice and investigate them. The other place in which something can be investigated is an impeachment inquiry. So this is not actually saying we're voting whether or not to impeach someone. This is an actual investigation to see, did impeachable offenses occur? And the difference between doing that versus doing it in some of the hearings is there's a little bit of different resources. I mean, but the difference also is that you're saying the word impeachment out loud. And so somewhat kicking off, you know, a process that if it comes to fruition would lead to impeachment. And then the last thing is there, you know, if impeachable offenses have been found, to take that up or down vote, then you have articles of impeachment. And so, you know, we're trying to help educate people just to understand what all the different options are out there. So Indivisible Oregon, and this is very particular to our organization, every organization, whether they're indivisible or not, is kind of coming to terms with what the Mueller report means and how to advocate around that. But Indivisible Oregon has come to consensus around the following, that Trump has committed impeachable offenses and he must be held accountable. So if you're calling or writing to your member of Congress, you can kind of choose in what way you would like him to be held accountable. You can say, I want to be held accountable with robust hearings in all of the congressional committees, or I would like him to be held accountable in an impeachment inquiry. So, you know, those are the kind of two main options that you can have. And I think, you know, each individual person kind of has to decide, you know, if you're a person who thinks an impeachable offense has happened, how you want that oversight to happen in Congress.
And this has a result of reading the huge report.
Yes, I have not read it cover to cover. I definitely have made my way through it. In addition to working with Indivisible Oregon, I have a podcast with two amazing co-hosts called End Times Pep Talk. And that's just endtimespeptalk.com. And we actually last week invited a lawyer that we know, and we went through about an hour diving into what the Mueller report said, just going through volume one in terms of like how our elections were attacked, volume two in terms of outlining some of the obstruction of justice, and really talking about, you know, what that report showed and how, you know, the people who were doing that report are really, they had a very narrow scope. You know, they were commissioned to do a certain question, and they were narrow in the sense that they are hemmed in by what our Justice Department will let them do. So the Justice Department says that, you know, a sitting president can't be indicted, and then, but you also can't make a commission of a crime if that person can't defend themselves. So it left a lot of nebulous areas. And, you know, basically there's writing in there that says Congress needs to take the next steps. And so we kind of outlined that in our last episode. And so, you know, Indivisible Oregon is now saying, Congress, you need to hold him accountable. And it's been a little bit difficult to kind of talk about the report because, you know, unfortunately, the current attorney general came out with his own 4-page letter a couple of weeks before the report was made available. And, you know, this is my personal opinion, lied about what was in the report or definitely misrepresented what was in the report.
Maybe he hadn't read it yet.
I don't know. It was a very quick letter that he wrote. It was 4 pages summarizing about 458 pages. And so, you know, it's very difficult. You know, I mean, I find it very difficult to understand. I'm not a lawyer. I don't know how to read these things. And so, you know, to try to understand really what's happening with our government, what's happening with these investigations, it takes a lot. And so that's what we're really hoping that investigations in Congress can shine a light on, you know, what happened.
Okay, so you're featuring some of those methods on the internet, on the website for Oregon.
Yeah, so Indivisible Oregon. Yeah, so Indivisible Oregon at indivisibleor.org/actions. For the last week and into this week, we are having calls saying that impeachable offenses occurred. We want Congress to hold this administration accountable. And so we highlight just different impeachable offenses that occurred. And we also have been highlighting some of the dangers to our elections and also advocating that we need to update our election security.
Okay. And then the other thing is that you had interviews on your podcast.
Yes.
And how would you, let's hear how you get to the podcast again.
So for anyone who's interested, as I said, it's End Times Pep Talk at endtimespeptalk.com. And so we are a weekly podcast, or we're a feminist podcast, and we kind of go through the news. We do calls to action that are heavily inspired by Indivisible Oregon. And then we kind of talk about how you can get election, you can get involved in elections if you so choose. And so we have interviewed, for instance, we interviewed Governor Kate Brown in the beginning of the legislative session, just talking about what her goals are for this upcoming session. And so, you know, we're hoping to do a look back to see, you know, what happened with those. We have interviewed Shannon Watts, who is a gun violence prevention advocate and the founder of Moms Demand Action, to really kind of dive into one of our co-hosts. She is a huge gun violence prevention advocate, an activist, and has been with Moms Demand for 5 years, and really talking about where that movement has gone and how, you know, 5 years ago to have an A letter from the A rating from the NRA was a badge of pride. And now it's something that people hide. And now having an F rating from the NRA is really a badge of pride. And so, you know, all of these things intersect. And I just like to point out.
And that would be the National Rifle Association.
Yes. And I just like to point out, you know, I never did any of these things 2 years ago, like none of this. And so
you were busy.
Yeah, I mean,
and still are.
And so, you know, I mean, it's just to show that, like, I thought that I was paying attention to things, and then I realized I personally felt after, you know, the 2016 election, I wasn't doing what I needed to do to maintain my democracy. And so I have really dived in deep, you know. I have worked to do some advocacy work as a physician. I have worked with Indivisible Oregon. I have done this podcast. But, you know, I would say that for anyone out there who's just wondering, you know, like, how do I get started? What do I do? I usually recommend if you can call your members of Congress once a week on a topic about which you really care. And then if there's a cause or a candidate in which you really believe and can donate like $5 a month, if you have the spare cash, those two actions can make a huge impact in participating in your democracy. And if you need scripts, Indivisible Oregon at indivisibleor.org/actions, we have scripts and you can search. So our entire scripts, which we have been doing them since January of 2017, if you have a keyword, you can search and just find. And we source them. They are fully sourced. So, you know, we try really hard to make sure that they are based on legitimate news sources. And so if there's something that you want to call about and wasn't in the last couple of weeks, you can definitely search and find that call.
You, Indivisible is doing excellent work, and it's not just here in Oregon, it's like all over the countryside, and it's all grassroots, and it's not, the funding is, there is no funding really, other than small efforts to keep things up, but the internet allows for a lot of free things and free information if you tune in.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I'm really glad that you've come once again, and we'll probably see you the next fifth Monday. And I've decided to donate the fifth Monday to Indivisible as well as other labor issues. So I appreciate you doing this. You're almost like a co-host.
Thank you.
And we'll send out a get well to Megan. Megan Cleland was scheduled to be here, but she's under the weather. And I threatened her to be co-host. So maybe that's what scared her off. I don't know. But as a closing for us, I would like to emphasize the Pacific Northwest Labor History Association that's going on Friday night, Saturday, all day Saturday, workshops going on. If you want to pop in at the University Place Hotel, which is at the top part of Portland State University. Come on in, check in, see which program looks interesting to you, and you can just drop into the workshops. And if you're a student, there's no charge at all. And basically, if you come by, there's no charge if you're just dropping into the workshops. The other thing I'd like to emphasize is the Labor Education Research Center. It is that has been around for decades, and for the university to decide to ditch it is just another effort to do away with union organizing and union people. So the president of the University of Oregon is Michael Schrill, S-C-H-I-L-L. You can address letters to President's Office, University of Oregon, Eugene, Oregon, 97403-1226. The -1226 assures it gets to his office, and let him know that LIRC is something that's worthy of your attention, of his attention, and perhaps maybe not make such deep cuts in that. So I think that does it. Thank you, Smitha. And we're going to close up, and we'll be back next Monday at 6 o'clock with Labor Radio. Thank you.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Cable Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Portland Pete Seeger Tribute and 100th Birthday Celebration on Friday, May 3rd from 7 to 9:30 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater in Portland. The 6th annual Pete Seeger Tribute is a family-friendly sing-along event that features Lauren Sheehan, Peter Hayes, Ben Davis, Bill Merlin, and many more. Again, that's the Portland Pete Seeger Tribute and 100th Birthday Celebration on Friday, May 3rd from 7 to 9:30 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding